Higher Human Performance, Episode 276, Leadership and the Stories You Tell.
Abracadabra.
And look at these Polaroids. They could only talk.
Please and thank you. Talking to myself again, wondering if this traveling is good. Is there something better to win we'd be doing if we could? And oh, the stories we could tell.
It's Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. It's their version of the stories we can tell. It's a John Sebastian song. Everly Brothers, Jimmy Buffett. Man, it's been covered by a lot of people. Hey, welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Cantrell, your host here at Higher Human Performance, the podcast. It's about leadership. It's about organizational effectiveness. Yeah, it's about higher human performance. You can find the show notes over at the website, higherhumanperformance.com. Just find episode 276. You can use the search this website box to do that. We all grew up hearing stories, didn't we? Parents read stories to us. Teachers, they read stories. We went to church and we heard preachers. They told us stories as well. The Bible has lots of great stories. Parents, teachers, preachers, they're not the only people in our lives who tell stories, though. Leaders do, too. And you're a leader. And if you're a leader, you tell stories. Well, you tell stories even if you're not a leader, but since this is a podcast about leadership, then that's our focus. Now, that doesn't mean that you're good at it. Doesn't mean that your stories are good. It doesn't mean that your stories are compelling. Doesn't mean that the stories are even effective in helping you lead better. So here's what I want you to do. Pay attention today. Pay attention today. It can be challenging to be in the moment because as leaders, we're often challenged with preoccupation, right? We got a lot of things going on. We got a lot of things on our calendar, a lot of things on our mind, a lot of things on our plate. Those are just the things that involve our agenda. I mean, these are the things that we got up today and we knew these things were going to come our way. But then there are dozens of other things, large and small. Those things that interrupt us throughout the course of a day. I hear you moaning already. It's your lot in life. You know, but I want you to just tap the brakes here for just a minute because I have a question, and this is a really serious question, and you need to ponder it. Who or what is the recipient of your leadership? That's right. Who or what is the recipient of your leadership? I'm going to give you a hint. It's always a who. It's only a what if you're describing a team, a department, an organization. But even then, it's a who because it's people. Because people make up your team. People make up your department. People make up your organization. And so even if you answer with a what, still people. People are the recipient of your leadership, always. Now, sadly, too many leaders, they just allow themselves to become distracted. And they become distracted with stuff. They become distracted with the work product instead of the people performing the work product. People perform. Leaders lead. That is, leaders help people perform better. And when they fail to do that, they fail to fulfill their function. They fail to fulfill their role in the organization. Now, we could go into a lot more detail about that, but hey, let's save that for another day because today I want to concentrate on one aspect of leadership that will help people perform better, and that's the stories. As always, today's show is brought to you by my company, Bula, B-U-L-A, Network, LLC. You can just go to the website, higherhumanperformance.com, and you can click the About tab, and there's also a tab labeled Who I Work With, and there's another one, Hire Me. And it doesn't have any pricing, but it'll kind of give you the lay of the land and kind of how I roll. But today it's about stories. It's about leadership and the stories we tell. I started paying attention to stories in the workplace when I was still a teenager. Every boss I ever had told stories. And some of them, they didn't tell very good stories, but others, they might not tell stories very well, but they all tell stories. Some kind of stories. Think back to elementary school. In elementary school, I would often gauge my affection for my teacher based on her, and yeah, they were all women, based on her ability to tell or to read stories well. Now, I cared about the performance. I wanted the teacher to have a really great ability to read aloud well, and not everybody's got that talent, but boy, some of the best elementary teachers that I ever had, yeah, they were great at it. They were spectacular. But I also paid attention to the kind of stories that they would select. I mean, we've all got a preference for certain kinds of stories. My interest, even as a little kid, my interest was mostly sparked by stories that, well, they were either true, which would mean they were kind of historical, usually, or at least they could be true. They could have been true. And so for me, fantasy and sci-fi kind of stuff, it wasn't very appealing to me as a little kid. True confession, it still isn't really. I mean, if I had the option between picking up a book on fantasy or sci-fi or something historical or something biographical or even a novel that could be true, you know, a mystery, yeah, I'm opting in for the latter, not the former. Now, my third grade teacher, she read The Boxcar Children by Gertrude Chandler Warner. Now, that was my kind of story. Okay, no, wasn't true, but could have been true, kind of, sort of. So when I began to work in businesses, first as a salesperson, I caught myself paying careful attention to the stories that the boss would tell. And I knew that it would give me insight into his values, his concerns, his worldview, his philosophies, anything else that might help me be a better employee. And one of my earliest strengths as a salesperson was preparation. I was fanatical about studying the products that I was selling. I'm not sure exactly where all this came from, but I was bent. I was bent on knowing more than anybody else about the stereo gear that I was selling. And it wasn't an ego-based thing. It wasn't that I wanted to, you know, flag my arms up in the air, declaring that I knew more than anybody else. It was a practical thing. It was a very practical thing that was designed to give me the biggest edge in selling more products and serving more customers, because I knew that if I could teach a customer about a feature that meant a lot to them, and so that meant, okay, I've got to find out what means something to these people. So I've got to think of great questions, and I've got to listen, I've got to pay attention, and then I've got to know the product well enough to know that, okay, I need to find a product that fits that. So for me, it was a customer service kind of a thing. And yeah, absolutely. It was a performance thing based on me being able to sell more stuff. I learned very early on that the salesperson that we tend to like the most and the one most likely to get our money is likely the salesperson who can show us that one thing that just makes all the difference. That one thing that just really resonates with us that maybe nobody else told us. And I realized that in a competitive situation like selling retail hi-fi gear, it's not like my products are that much different than the stereo shop across town. But if I could hone in on a feature that I knew would touch a hot button with this shopper and nobody else could find that hot button or satisfy it, yeah, I got the business. So it was a game for me. And the game was the game of Intel. Yeah, not the company, but the short for intelligence. I wanted my intel. I wanted my intelligence to be superior to anybody else in the market. Now, the boss would tell stories, and that would give me intel. It would give me intel that I could use to be a more valuable employee. And besides, I've always been the kind of guy that enjoyed figuring out why certain people told certain stories and certain kinds of stories. So very early on, selling was, and frankly it still is, a very story-driven activity for me. Coaching is too. Consulting is too. You know, I can see a client's eyes light up with an, oh, now I get it, kind of a moment after I tell some brief story or use an illustration, which is really just a micro story, that just really resonates with them. If I can find something that really connects with them, I get these aha moments. Happens all the time. And I'm constantly searching for that connection because it means I've done my work well. And it means, great, I'm getting my point across. I'm helping. So the boss is always talking about his stuff, his car, his house, his vacation, his family. It's all about him all the time. You ever had a boss like that? Well, if you've had any experience at all in workplaces, you've likely had experiences like that. Some bosses are just, well, they're that self-centered. I hope that's not you as a leader, but if it is, stop it. Stop it right now. Get your mind off yourself at work and start thinking about your people. Well, one of my earliest bosses, he was just like this. His stuff, his car, his house, his toys. But my immediate boss, the guy that I really worked for, he was just the opposite. And boy, was I glad. My immediate boss, he was a pretty remarkable guy. He was a very attentive guy. And the stories that he told, they would deal with merchandise and they would deal with shoppers and they would deal with employees. He was quite focused on the merchandise, though. And you know what? He had worked for a manufacturer in another lifetime. So he was a pretty product intensive kind of guy. And so I learned from listening to him tell stories, I learned that product knowledge was really important to him. Maybe that's where I got it. I was really disposed that way anyway, to really want to learn the product. He wanted his staff to be among the most knowledgeable salespeople around. Okay, I'm already bent this way. I'm already bent to increase my intel, including product knowledge. And so this is not hard for me. This is a good fit. Right? I'm working for a boss that is really congruent with the kind of person I am. I would sometimes find myself urging fellow employees who didn't quite know their stuff to quit wasting your downtime in some of this nonsense and spend your downtime brushing up on your product knowledge. It was important to the boss. Okay, better be important to us as employees. Years later, I learned that I could employ the same intel strategies to figure anybody out. When you sit down to negotiate with somebody and you have no idea what kind of stories they like to tell, you are in a less desirable position than if you've heard them tell lots of stories. The more, the better. And it's why two of the fundamental things that I urge all of my clients to do is listen and ask questions. Listen and ask questions. And then I'd add a third, and that is, and listen again. It's very common for me to teach people my personal selling philosophy. There are two basic selling philosophies. And they're very opposite, by the way, in their tactics, in their viewpoint, in their implementation. Selling philosophy, number one, as long as I'm talking, I'm selling. Selling philosophy, number two, as long as you're talking, you're buying. Okay. We've got two verbs here. In selling philosophy, number one, the verbs are talking and selling. And in philosophy number two, as long as you're talking, the implication is the verb listening and buying. I'm solidly in the second camp of selling philosophy number two. As long as you're talking, you're buying. I just don't have any tolerance for people who are entrenched in that first camp. If I can't move somebody from camp one to camp two, I am probably going to quit. I mean, that's how important this is to me. That's how much I believe in the superiority of selling philosophy number two. That first strategy, it's just too selfish. It's just too selfish. Now, even leaders who don't consider themselves salespeople, that's every leader. Every leader is a salesperson. The great leaders, they're strong salespeople, maybe even great. They employ one of these strategies in their own leadership style. And it goes beyond listening. It goes beyond talking. It's the urge of the leader to employ one or more than the other in order to influence and in order to persuade. I want you to look very closely at yourself. You're a leader. I want you to think very closely about your leadership. Are you a leader who sits down with somebody or a group of somebodies and you hold forth without much interaction, without much of an open mind? And you think, the more I talk, the more they're going to understand. The more I talk, the more they're going to buy. Sure, there are times that a leader needs to hold forth. Not all the time. I mean, for example, when a leader is trying to educate staff on some history that might be relevant or some decision that's already been reached and maybe how that decision was reached, I can think of a number of situations like that where holding forth is educational. Holding forth is intended to provide insight. But tell me enough stories, and I will tell you your story. So let's consider your storytelling habits as a leader. If I can hear you tell enough stories, I can figure out how you roll. And I'll go you one better, even if you're not a leader. Even if you're not a leader, tell me enough stories and I'm going to tell you your story. Oh, I may not get the details down cold, but I'll pretty much have you figured out. And there's no magic to it. This isn't some voodoo trick. It's what's in our heart that comes out in our speech. Our stories reveal things about us. They can even betray us if we're trying to pretend to be something that we're not. Join in a group conversation. You've done this many times. Just any kind of a group. Doesn't matter. It can be a meetup. It can be a group of strangers. It can be a group of people that you know well. And put as many people as you want in this conversation. There can be as few as two. There can be as many as you want. And enter a person who always has a story to trump your story. Or they got a story to trump the other guy's story. It doesn't matter. If everybody is standing around, this person, they're always leaning forward just slightly, sometimes maybe even on their toes. Because they're anxious to speak, and they're anxious to speak as soon as there's a lull in the conversation. Let me watch that person. A complete stranger, and let me hear that person for a few minutes, and I will likely be able to tell you quite a lot about that person, especially if he's able to insert himself with enough stories. The same's true for you. The same's true for me. The same's true for anybody else. It's especially true of leaders because all leaders have stories to tell, and they tell them to somebody sometime. I am not making a distinction between the more quiet leader and the more outgoing leader. Okay, this doesn't have anything to do with personality and style. That does, and I'm not talking about that because I don't care. I don't care about that because there is not one personality or one style that is more suited for leadership. I know some people think so. I don't. Now, I do believe that there are personalities and styles, and the timing might be best for one over the other. You see this in coaching all the time in professional sports. You see a team, for instance, that really lacks discipline and really needs kind of a strong, authoritarian, take charge and gain control kind of a coach. And if they have what we typically call a player's coach, it might not go so well. They might need a person who's a little tougher, a little more regimented. Is that a personality thing? Is that a style thing? I don't think it's either. I think it's a timing thing. I think teams and organizations they need a certain style at various times throughout their evolution. Now, I do know some really great leaders who can provide that. They can be congruent with who they are and still provide what the organization needs, even if the organization needs something different today than maybe what they needed 3 years ago. The same person can fulfill that. I freely admit that that can be hard. So don't get too caught up in the whole personality style thing, because I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about quiet versus outgoing. I'm not talking about introvert versus extroverted, because effective leaders come in all varieties, shapes, and sizes. Even quiet leaders tell stories. Now, they may not tell as many stories. They may not tell them to as many people. Doesn't matter. Today's show still applies. Okay, so you're looking inside at your own story crafting, right? That's what I want you to do. I want you to think about your own stories as a leader. Do you have any favorite stories? Think about your favorite stories. Think about the stories that you catch yourself repeating time and time again. What are they? What's their theme? What's the point? What about all the impromptu stories? You know, the ones that they just come up in everyday life. They come up at the office. We're talking about professional stories. We're talking about your leadership at work. I have sat down and I have spent hundreds of hours in conversations with single leaders. And I have sat down and I've spent just a handful of hours with a single leader. The first, the one that I've spent hundreds of hours with, it just gives me more opportunities to hear their stories and to hear different stories. But in both cases, whether I'm sitting down for a few hours or for hundreds of hours, I've had enough time to at least hear some stories. And it's like anything else. The more data that you have, the more valid things become. The more stories you're able to hear, the more clear the picture becomes of this leader. So I'm sitting with a CEO, and he's like most CEOs. He's willing to carry the conversation more than not. And he's more than willing to make it about himself. Now, he's not pompous. He's not arrogant. So I don't want you to get the wrong idea. He's just confident. He's really confident. And he's doing what good CEOs do. He's trying to be impressive. He's not working it too hard. Don't think that. He's being impressive. And I'm not offended. And I'm not put off. He is an affable personality. You could even say he's a little bit charming. It is not unattractive, okay? And he recites a business success story. And the success story that he tells is about some opportunity that he got out of the clear blue sky. It just came and landed in his lap. And it's a good story. It's a good story. I listen to this story. I'm very interested in this story. And I give him appropriate feedback, bragging about his good fortune. Instantly, he follows it up with another story, just like the first story. It's a story about business serendipity. It's about a business deal that landed in his lap. He didn't go looking for it, but it was such a good opportunity, he couldn't ignore it. And again, I do what I did after the first story. I compliment him. Well, this continues now for a few more stories. And after about half an hour, I have pieced together some common denominators in these stories. A, he's well known in his space. B, his notoriety in this space is bringing him these unexpected opportunities. C, people offer him these deals that other people would think are just maybe too good to be true, but they do it because they know that he can bring more business. And D, he's a smart operator who knows how to take advantage of these opportunities, and he can make the most out of them. Good stories. So we talk a little bit longer. Not a single story about an employee. No team member's name, no team member's position or function ever enters the conversation. Not a single story about a customer either. Now, before you think that I am judging the character of this man, just tap those brakes. That's not the objective of this. The objective is to unearth some intel on his leadership. And just like my boss when I was a kid who had a propensity for product knowledge. It is what it is. Okay. I'm not judging it. I just try to deal with it the best way possible. So I engaged some employees of this man. I listened to their stories. Guess what? They tell stories about the boss. And they tell stories about the deals that have come his way. And about his prowess to turn these good deals into great deals. Well, now, isn't that interesting? I go around and I find story after story after story about the boss. And sooner than later, it's very clear to me, the boss is the culture. The organization's success is built on the art of the deal. And the boss, well, he's the king of the deal. Now, again, there's nothing wrong with this. It is what it is. It's a culture and it's a leadership that is deal based. How do I know that? I've listened to the stories they're telling. Why the stories matter. Leaders, more so than other employees, can tell the stories that they most want to tell. The reason for this is very clear. They've got a built-in audience that can't walk out on them. Employees are forced to listen. Oh, well, okay, maybe more accurately, they're forced to sit in silence and give the audience to the boss. But employees tell stories too. All our stories matter because they reveal some important things. Number one, our stories reveal our values. As a leader, our stories reveal our values. A single story might not show much, but as leaders, we tell lots of stories. And the cumulative effect of our stories shows our professional and our personal values. Now, I catch myself telling story after story about the collective failure of leaders, if only occasionally, to serve people who have no idea there's a problem. This is a really common theme in a lot of my stories. True confession. I tell story after story about the collective failure of leaders to serve people who don't have any idea there's a problem. I mean, for example, a company hires a new employee. It's a small company. They don't have any kind of an HR department. So onboarding isn't some structured formal process for this company. It's mostly done by just forcing the new employee to acclimate themselves. And it works well enough. Yeah, it could be better. Sure, the process could be formalized and it would help, absolutely. But they don't do that. Now, a few weeks in, the new employee unwittingly commits this faux pas in a meeting where he says something that just rankles the big boss. And as the team is discussing this business matter, the newest employee makes a statement in midstream. And here's what it is. Brace yourself. It's jarring. I don't know why we do that. Yeah, that's right. New employee just utters the statement, I don't know why we do that. He wasn't mean-spirited about it. I wasn't there, but so I was told. It wasn't said in a mean-spirited way. He just blurted it out, probably without realizing how it may have sounded, especially as the new kid. Nobody said anything to him. Nobody said a word, not then, not later. But later, the CEO remarked to me, who does he think he is? Who does he think he is? And I said, well, did you speak with him about it? No, he didn't. But he told me the story about it. And it wasn't the first story like that that I'd heard from this CEO, because this leader, like most leaders, he valued, well, guess what he valued? Because our stories reveal our values. Knowing your place. This newest team member blew it. He blew it by alerting to the CEO that he hadn't yet learned his place. And I suspect that the new employee hadn't spent enough time hearing the stories to really understand how things rolled in this new place where he was working. And rather than keep silence, take some time to figure it all out, this person who had an assertive personality, and he had this sense of proactivity. In fact, those were two of the qualities that got him the job. But now they've worked against him because now he's inadvertently stepped in it. Here's the shame of it. Had no idea he'd stepped in it. Didn't know it. Yeah, I led the parade for senior executives to pull him aside, talk with him about it, make sure he knew what he had done. Not a hard discussion, right? Not a confrontation, but a necessary discussion. What do you value as a leader? Let me hear your stories and I'll tell you what they are. Now, a few lessons on this point. If you're in a new situation and you don't yet know the lay of the land, here's the lesson to learn. Keep quiet. Pay close attention to how other people are behaving, how they talk, when they talk, how they posture themselves. Be aware and learn before you violate a value that you don't even know exists. Number two, our stories reveal what we think matters most. I didn't say our stories reveal what does matter most. Our stories reveal what we think matters most as leaders. This CEO, he didn't focus on the purpose of the meeting where this new employee had stumbled. In fact, I still to this day can't tell you, I don't know what the business problem was that was being discussed when this employee blurted this out. That was never shared with me, and I never did even ask. And it's not because it wasn't important. It was bound to be because the staff had gathered to discuss it. But isn't it interesting that it paled in comparison to what the newest team member had done? That one simple statement. I don't know why we do that. That one statement trumped anything else that happened in that meeting. I mean, it was a point of discussion among the senior leaders. They were talking about it for days after this meeting. And for days, they were wondering exactly what the CEO was wondering. What was he thinking? How dare he? Now, again, I don't judge these things too much. Okay, sure, it's human nature to judge them a little bit, but I don't judge them too much. I just observe them, and I try to figure out how to make the wisest use of them. And so when I sat down with this employee after the fact, we talked about it. He was completely innocent of anything malicious. He genuinely did want to know why the company did a certain thing. But rather than ask the question, something that he was just a little bit afraid to do because he wanted to display this greater confidence, he just blurted out the statement, I don't know why we do that. He wasn't even aware that that's exactly how he had said it until the senior executive engaged him in a conversation about it and told him about it and said, you know, we're kind of miffed about this. Now, he had since gone to the CEO, and he had gone to everybody that was in that meeting. There were a handful of people in the meeting. He had gone to them all individually and apologized. He certainly didn't mean it the way that it had come across. And, you know, he was doing everything he could to repair whatever damage was done. It was not his intention to come across the way he had. And now he's worried, and now he's anxious. I mean, man alive, at this point, he's only 8 weeks or so on the job, and he's fearful that, okay, maybe I need to just look for a new job. You know, maybe I'm just not going to fit here. No, instead, I encourage you, keep your head up, pay closer attention to how others behave, how they talk, and the stories that they tell, especially the stories of the CEO. And I urged him to learn the priorities of the company by listening to and looking for the common themes of the stories. Knowing your place matters. Now that you know that, okay, know your place. If that's a problem for you career-wise, well, that's your decision, not mine. Every leader displays the priorities, what they think matters most, by the stories they tell. Now, you could argue with these priorities at your own peril, but I think a better strategy is just to listen and learn. As for leaders, if you're not happy, now get this, if you are not happy with the priorities of your organization, what your organization thinks matters most to you, yeah, examine the stories that you're telling. Look real closely because you'll likely find that these priorities that you now are thinking, you know, these aren't the priorities I really want people chasing. You'll likely find that the priorities they are chasing are the priorities that are woven throughout your stories. So you need to craft your stories to emphasize the priorities that you want. Number two, our stories reveal what we think most matters. Number three, our stories reveal how we see problems and what we see as problems. Now, the CEO in this illustration, he used a one He used a one-word story once you understood the context of what happened. Well, it was, okay, it's a one-sentence story, but, you know, it boiled down to think. What does he think he is? Or who does he think he is? I mean, what does he think he's doing? Translation, he's completely out of line. Well, maybe. But maybe it's not exactly as it appears. Maybe it's not exactly as it seems. Have you ever gotten it wrong? Sure, we've all gotten it wrong. Well, what if the CEO's got it wrong? Okay, even so, the CEO, he saw that knowing your place, as, he saw that as a problem. And it was manifested in this single statement by a meeting participant who happened to be the newest employee. Okay, did I think it was a big deal? No, but it didn't much matter what I thought. What mattered is what the CEO thought, because I'm not running the show. He is. He thought it was, he didn't think that it was just a problem. He thought it was a big problem. He was preoccupied by it. I mean, he was really wound up about it. The actual business challenge, whatever that conversation, whatever the point of this meeting had been, that the actual business challenge, I never heard a conversation about it. I never heard a single story about it. But the new employee, his misspeak, I heard lots of conversation about that. The CEO cared more about the culture of his team than he did conquering the actual problem. Now, before you knee-jerk react to all this, don't. Because here's what I know. The CEO knew that his team would solve the business problem. So, it's a problem, not that big a problem. He's more concerned about the difficulty of solving this possible culture issue with this new employee. Okay, was his reaction the smartest? No. He'd tell you that now. Yeah, sure, I had a small role to play in that. But he admits that it really irked him. It really irked him in the moment. And he admits that he got real preoccupied by it. And part of my work involved helping him as a leader not let perceived problems become problems. I mean, it turned out to be much ado about nothing. And he and his senior leaders, they lost some time and they lost some attention due to it, though. And I pointed this out. And they waxed on and on for a few days about it until I was able to persuade them, just have the direct conversation with this new employee and put this behind you. And they did. So number three, our stories reveal how we see problems and what we see as problems. Number four, our stories reveal our leadership style. This particular CEO had a style that everybody needed to understand, especially the new guy. And here it is. He's an emotional guy. He can be pretty quick to pull the trigger on an assumption. I mean, do I really need to tell you that after telling you his story? Of course not. It shows, right? That's what stories do. Now, it's up to the leader if the leader wants to alter that style. In this case, the leader is wrestling with his style. Now, nothing's going to change him emotionally. I'm not going to come in, and I'm not trying to come in and help any leader who's really emotional. Okay, don't be so emotional. But he is learning to slow down his trigger finger on jumping to conclusions because of that emotionalism. And he's doing that because he wants to. And he's doing that because he thinks it'll make him a more effective leader. And I think he's right. But again, that's his call. It's not my call. My job is to help him explore and find better ways to do what he wants, to serve his organization as a more effective leader. Tell more intentional stories. Tell more intentional stories. I want to help you improve your own leadership by helping you tell stories that will serve your purposes. So take a very good look at your stories. Sit down with your trusted lieutenants, however many you have. Solicit their help to dissect your story. Come on, they're in the audience. They're the ones listening to these stories. You need their feedback. You need their input. What can they tell you about the stories that you're telling? Are they getting the point of it? They may be listening to stories and they may not be getting what you think they're getting. And what are the signals that these stories, in their opinion, what are the signals being sent to the organization? Where the stories convey something other than what you want to convey, then don't just change the stories. You need to examine why you're telling these stories. Why is that one business owner telling me stories of these business deals? I mean, what's compelling him to tell that kind of a story? And those stories are being repeated by his people. Why? Well, I don't know, but you need to examine why you're telling the stories that you're telling. What is it that irks you? I don't mean about your stories, just in general. This one CEO that I told you about, he's irked by people who don't know their place. That irks him. Well, I know other leaders, they're not irked by that at all, but they're irked by other things. What irks you? Because what irks you, it's going to come out in your stories. What satisfies you? What makes you really happy? That also affects your stories. Now, I'm going to tell you, avoid the cursory glance. You need to go deeper. You don't need to just first blush this. You need to dive a little bit deeper, and you need to give this the time that it deserves. Do not expect a single sit-down session with your inner circle to do the job. It won't. Because you've likely been telling these stories without that much thought or strategy. Most of us do. They're just stories. I mean, they're just the stories that you're telling, and you're not thinking about them maybe as much as you should. The CEO telling me about the stories of deals that fall in his lap, he's not thinking about how that's impacting his organization. He's just telling stories that he thinks are pretty cool stories. Now, he happens to be at the center of them all, and there's something to that. So this means that you need to think about the stories that you're telling, and that means you need to look at them. Give it some diligent consideration. Ask questions, and then ask questions again, and then ask some more questions, and listen. Listen for the feedback. Collect your own answers, and then collect the answers of the people that you trust the most. Now, after you do that, I want you to give yourself some more time to craft the stories that will best or better serve the organization. Now, don't mistake. I had somebody tell me not long ago, they used the word contrived and contrivances. No. Don't mistake these as contrivances. A contrivance is something that appears to be something that's not. Your stories are going to be genuine. Your stories are going to serve a genuine purpose. They're going to be honest. They're not going to be acts of deceit. They are not going to be contrivances. You know, for example, one senior leader that I know always told stories of poor conduct. I mean, just story after story would be filled with annoyances of things that his employees had done. Now, sometimes the stories would be about inappropriate things that were said or inappropriate attire. Now, the stories were never about the actual work of the person. In fact, if I ask, and I often did ask, about the work of a particular person who would be the subject of a story, he would often say, in fact, I don't ever remember him saying otherwise, oh, their work's pretty good. I don't remember him ever saying, oh, their work, it sucks. Truth is, their work just didn't much matter. Their work did not matter as much as these missteps in behavior. And so after a considerable time coaching this leader, he realized that his stories and his outlook, not real beneficial to the organization, not real beneficial to his leadership. And these things, they still irritated him now. No change in that. But he learned a more profitable way to deal with these irritations. Namely, he started being more direct in helping these employees understand what they were doing, even as most times was the case, they didn't even know it, and how they could fix it. Well, that made him feel better because now he felt like he was doing something positive to remedy the situation, whereas before he just kind of felt like he was venting. And he had convinced himself that venting was about all he could do about it. Okay, well, he learned, no, I can do more about it. I can really impact these people. I can fix these problems. I can tell this person, listen, you came to work and you had this on, and that's not cool. I really would rather you not come to work dressed like that. In time, he began to craft stories that had a different theme. He wanted his organization to be laser-focused on performance, But when we started dissecting the stories he was telling, he realized he's not telling stories about performance. And so he started telling stories of success and failure that were directly pointed to the output people produced, performance. Well, the team saw the shift. Now, I can guarantee you most of the people, most of the employees could not pinpoint exactly, yeah, what's different here? Something's changed. They knew something had changed, but they didn't have a clue what. They just started concentrating on what the boss was talking about. Yeah. The stories he was telling. If you're not spending enough time looking at and crafting the stories that best serve your organization, start. And don't stop. And there it is. Episode 276, Leadership and the Stories You Tell. Oh yeah, I could wax on, but come on. Nearly 46 minutes, that's long enough. You got the point. So give it the effort, give it the work that it deserves. If I can be of any service to you, that would be great and that would be awesome. Just visit the website, hirehumanperformance.com. Bula Network LLC is the sponsoring company, my company. It's a boutique executive coaching and consulting firm focusing heavily on leadership and executive coaching. It's what we do. We help leaders lead better, impact more people. If the podcast is the best way that we can serve you, well, that's terrific, because guess what? It costs you nothing. It's free. How cool is that? So, coming to you from Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas, my name is Randy Cantrell. Again, the website, hirehumanperformance.com. I appreciate you listening. I'm coming to you from a little place that I call the Yellow Studio.